President Trump a friend, although they have had a few spats over the time. Over the weekend, journalist Piers Morgan took a call from the White House. On the line, President Donald Trump. What did they chat about? Well, we're about to ask Piers Morgan. He's one of Britain's most feared talk show hosts, newspaper columnists, and he's got a new book out called Wake Up. It's about hitting back at cancel culture and standing up for common sense. Right up our alley. Piers Morgan, good morning.
Good morning to you, Ben.
I've been warned that I'll struggle to get a word in. Will I get a word in with you?
Of course, it's your show.
How is President Trump and does he think he can win?
Well, it was a very interesting conversation. I've not spoken to him since April when I wrote a column for thedailymail.com saying that he should shut the bleep up because he'd been telling people to use bleach to cure coronavirus. And he reacted rather badly and unfollowed me on Twitter overnight. And that was the last contact I had with him. And then, out of nowhere, I got a call on Saturday from the White House saying the president would like to speak to you. And it's not the kind of call where you say, well, actually, I'm a bit busy. It's the weekend. So I took the call and we had a long conversation, about 25 minutes and pretty wide ranging, very cordial, given that I've been spending the entire pandemic beating him up. But what my takeaway from it all was despite everything and despite the horrendous, woeful handling of the crisis by Trump, he seems remarkably bullish about his chances of winning the election and proving everybody wrong all over again.
He said at the end of the conversation, Piers, I'm going to win this thing.
Yeah, that was his last words. And then he went to vote and I literally turned on TV and there he was about 45 minutes later voting in Florida. And yeah, he feels that the polls got it completely wrong last time. He thinks they're wrong again this time. He's doing 3 big rallies a day down in all these swing states. And, you know, he knows the key battlegrounds are about 5 or 6 states. It's a strange system in America. It's not about the popular vote. It's not about the total number of votes you get. It's about the key swing states. And in those, he thinks he's far more competitive than he is nationally and far more competitive than the pollsters are showing.
He's got this extraordinary energy and he's very good at managing the media. But one of his big challenges is the truth. You know, when he talked about injecting bleach to cure coronavirus, he later defended it by saying, oh, no, it was all a joke. I didn't mean that. That was just a joke. But I think anyone who saw it would say, no, he meant what he said. He's got to be careful because credibility and honesty matters at election time.
Absolutely. And I thought what he said then was completely ridiculous. And in fact, I think his whole handling of the pandemic has been ridiculous. Unfortunately, it's exacerbated the very worst Donald Trump traits of narcissism and trying to bull talk his way through all this stuff. And you can't do that to a virus. You know, it's a very real thing. It's killing people. It's wrecking economies and jobs and livelihoods. And it needs straight talking. And that's what the American people, I think, have been lacking in their president. And he knows what I think. I've been very clear about it, very blunt about it. But it's a strange situation for me because I've known Trump 15 years, long before he ever got into politics. I competed in his first Celebrity Apprentice series in America. I won it. And then after that, went back in every year as his boardroom advisor. And then suddenly this guy that has become quite a good friend of mine runs for office and wins and becomes the most powerful man on earth. And to make it even more complicated, turns out to be unbelievably polarizing and controversial. So it's been a strange journey, but it was interesting talking to him on Saturday. I just got a feeling that he's not given up. He knows he's way behind, but he thinks that a week is a long time in American politics this year. And he's right. And anything could happen. There's no doubt his energy levels, when you look at his rallies, are 10 times that of Biden, who's played a very cautious game in this campaign. And it's a strategy that may turn out to be brilliant, or it may cost him.
What do you make of the way Boris Johnson has handled the virus? He caught it, he nearly died from it. And you say Britain is being led by a bunch of clueless, blithering buffoons. Is that Boris you're talking about?
Well, he is a clueless, blithering buffoon, yeah. And I've known Boris 30 years, twice as long as I've known Trump. And I've always got on well with him personally, as I've done with Trump. But I just think, again, like Trump with the pandemic, Boris's skill set is not detail. It's not anything scientific. It's not, you know, reality. It tends to be, you know, basically coming out and braying away about how he's going to cure the world of all known problems. And when he's hit with a real problem like this, he was found seriously wanting. And Britain's had the worst death toll in Europe. It's had the worst economic meltdown in Europe. And it continues to be, in my opinion, a complete shambles. I think he's got a very mediocre cabinet. It's one of the worst governments I can remember for a long time. And unfortunately, their arrival has coincided with one of the biggest crises of my lifetime. So it's a recipe for what we're seeing now, which is disaster.
We're talking to Piers Morgan, TV host and newspaper columnist. He's got a brand new book out called Wake Up, which is available in Australia. Piers, I want to talk to you about Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. When they fell in love, I said to my wife, this is not going to end well. And you were briefly friends with her, but then she brushed you when she met Harry. And some thought that you were guilty of sour grapes for criticising the couple. But then they started complaining about everything and Harry fell out with William. Harry and Meghan left the royal family, and now they seem to have gone so woke and so politically correct. We only hear from them when they're whinging or whining,
which is every day. Yeah, they've become utterly nauseating, haven't they? And I did know Meghan quite well for about 18 months, and she met Harry and dumped me like a sack of cold spuds, which is entirely her right, but it certainly informed me about what she's like. And in my opinion, from everything I've witnessed, she's a ruthless social climber who got her claws into our handsome young Prince Harry, who was hugely popular here, and she has stolen him to California, to their $11 million mansion in Santa Barbara, where they lecture the world about equality. I mean, you couldn't make it up, really, but it's, you know, the sadness for me is for the Queen, really. She's 94, this is her grandson, beloved grandson, and he's sort of gone rogue, and they want their royal cake and eat it, those two. They want to keep the titles Duke and Duchess of Sussex and trade off those and do their $100 million Netflix deals making their woke documentaries, but they don't want to turn up on a wet Wednesday in Stoke in the north of England and you know, do their charitable work, which goes with being a Duke or Duchess. So in my estimation, if they really want to be independent and free, they've got to give up titles. And if they don't give them up, the Queen should take them away.
You've really ripped into the cancel culture, as we've done on this program here in Australia. And there have been some high-profile examples in Britain this year. One of the biggest was the BBC looking at dumping Royal Britannia over lyrics linked to slavery. And thankfully, people power won out against the cancel culture.
Yes, and it was important because I think the problem with the cancel culture and the woke, ultra-liberal woke crowd is that in the end, they'll just keep destroying everything and anyone that doesn't agree completely with their worldview. And it's a very narrow worldview. They want to have the right to tell us all how to lead our lives and how to think and act and speak and what jokes to find funny and what music to like and so on. And of course, all it does is it annoys the main body of the populace of the country where this goes on, be it, you know, UK, US, Australia. Most people are actually have common sense about life. They want to go about their life doing what they want to do within the realms of the law. As long as they're not, you know, scaring the animals, upsetting the kids, they should be allowed to do it. And now we have this woke culture, which has, I think, been exacerbated by social media. And it's become dangerous. You see lots of companies bowing to it. You see lots of people having their careers and lives trashed because of it. And this is not about protecting overt racism or transphobia or any of those things. I am repulsed by those as much as anybody else. But it is about saying, look, I mean, I heard a debate coming out of Australia. Is chess racist? And at that point, you realize all the protests after the terrible death of George Floyd, the killing of George Floyd, was sort of pointless if you're then going to end up with an open debate about whether chess is racist because the white piece goes first. And my book's really a clarion call to everyone to wake up, but particularly people who claim to identify as liberal but don't actually have a liberal bone in their body and have become an illiberal form of fascist. And just stop it. Let people lead their lives. Be sensible. Let's work together to effect real change on issues like the gender debate, like racism, like all this stuff, without going completely start raving bonkers.
Well, we've been waking people up to the dangers of political correctness and cancel culture here on this radio station in Australia for a long time, and I can't wait to read the book. Now, you famously got into the nets with Brett Lee and he bowled a bouncer or two at you. Is the bruise still there?
You know what? I still get flashbacks. It was one of the maddest things I've done in my life. But it was a moment when I suddenly realized I was in terrible trouble. And it came He bowled the first ball, which I didn't see, and it crashed into my wrist. I thought he'd broken it. And then I could see Brett Lee laughing. And I realized then I was in big trouble. And the game then was simply to survive the over, which I managed to do. But I broke a rib, and then he hit the broken rib with the next ball. And we were wearing headsets, and he came running down. And he went, "Oh, mate, did you hear that one crack?" And I thought, yeah, I need to get out of here as soon as possible.
Well, but I'm telling you.
Incredibly, we've actually remained good friends, but my ribs will never forgive him.
It wasn't just Brett Lee laughing, I can tell you, but we really love your work here in Australia, and I'd love to be able to catch up on a more regular basis. Thank you so much, and good luck with the book. It's called Wake Up.
Cheers, man. Good to talk to you.
Piers Morgan on the line live from the UK. 2GB Track.